This conference will now be recorded.
Here we go.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. The time is 2:04. And I'll call the meeting to order. And we have present Charles.
Present.
Cheryl.
Present.
And Peter.
Present.
That accounted for.
Okay, I thought I might start this with the way I view how we should go about doing a presentation. I think the first thing we should do is, why are we doing it? What's the reasons? And so I started putting down the problems that are being experienced. And the one thing is that there are towns who don't want to adopt a code of ethics. Why? Well, other towns have a code of that ethics, but they can't get people to appoint people to the committee. And they're also then the costs that are involved. They'd have to have an attorney, an investigator, and costs of holding hearings. So those are the reasons why we're sort of looking at a proposal of doing something regional to share these problems and maybe get rid of them. Your thoughts?
I agree, but there was an announcement, I think 2 weeks ago, that the state has decided that each of the counties, despite the fact it doesn't have its own county government, should be considered a governmental subdivision. Would that empower SCROG or COG or any of the others to have more authority and therefore be more of a tool for us to use to get municipal ethics going?
Well, if we can call it county government, then it should be a little easier than as it's titled now. They've been working as a county. I know I've been sitting in with these guys in the New Haven region before they were even called the Council of Governments. They were the regional body of elected officials. And then they had to change it because the two towns had town managers and they felt left out. So they had to change it called county governments. So I think they're fairly open-minded to listen. And that's all we want to do is get a hearing. But how do we make the proposal?
One of the things that was said when we met with Betsy and, okay, I'm having a senior moment.
Yeah, I have forgotten the name too.
Collins.
Collins. Collins, okay.
Collins, yeah.
One of the things was, how do we turn it where we make it seem as though we are helping the municipalities, that by them agreeing to pursue this, we're actually doing them a favor, because the whole issue of having your neighbor deal with an ethics complaint on that local level is removed. And one of the things that I was thinking is, how does our proposal then fit into the town's mission statement or scope? Because one of the things I wrote down and I underlined was, we have to avoid overreach because that will immediately turn everybody off.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a way we can tweak this where we present it, where we're actually doing them a favor by creating this, I won't say generic, but non-biased approach to handling ethics on a regional basis.
One of the things
you look very perplexed, Peter.
One of the things we could suggest to them is what we're doing by standardizing it is making sure that you and your neighbors have the exact same rules that everyone has to live under. So nobody is going to be able to say that your rules are slack, your rules are too tough. Everybody's got the same rules.
That's true, and that's a good point. However, how do you then reach out to the people? I'm just looking here. I have down that Deep River doesn't have an ethics policy, but it's in progress. I don't know how long that takes. But for the people that don't want anything, like Killingworth and Lebanon and Lisbon, how do you get them to swallow what I'll call a bitter pill, which is how they would view it?
Well, if only they'd have a scandal, then maybe it would help.
Well, one way, Cheryl, by the way, Deep River has an operational ethics code, and they also have, they formed an ethics board recently, actually, I think earlier this year. So they're in good shape. It took them a while, but they're operational. As to, I agree with Charles, what Charles just said, that I think there has to be some kind of a uniform approach within the region. I think it would be confusing and also a heavy lift for in terms of expectations, for example, for a regional board to handle multiple ethics codes. Because let's assume there's a controversy in one town, they have a code of ethics, and you want folks outside of that town make determination whether that code been violated. They have to get up to speed on that town's code. I'm assuming the enforcement mechanism could be standardized regionally in terms of the procedures. But in terms of the application of substantive provisions of the code, yeah, that's the tricky part. I mean, do we handle, let's say, I don't know how many towns are in a given COG. I mean, obviously the Hartford one is the largest, but let's say Mary's COG, the one in your area, I know you have 10 towns, I believe, or so in that area. I mean, are we dealing with 10 different codes? So that's one consideration.
So we have to take a step back if we're going to pursue this to let all these municipalities, these towns know that they have to perhaps rework their code of ethics to fall within the guidelines of everybody having the same set of rules. I believe that's going to be a huge turnoff.
That's one. The other thing, although to sweeten the this proposal, is maybe start first with a volunteer approach. In other words, what towns do want to participate in regionalized ethics enforcement? I mean, that's one way of dealing with it. I mean, so for example, you have 10 towns in a given COG. Let's see who wants to do this on a volunteer basis and subject themselves to enforcement on the regional level. That could be one way of dealing with it. Unless, here's the thing, unless we're dealing, we would have to review, let's take one COG, for example, review their codes of ethics. I mean, is there really a huge variance between the provisions? I mean, some provisions are standard, clearly gift giving, conflicts, but is there anything else? And how do you handle it? I mean, you really have to have people who are enforcing it get up to speed on different codes.
Yeah. And then where do we get the money? I'm sorry, Charles.
No, go ahead.
There is also a money factor.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, that's why I think maybe volunteer approach is the way to go, because ultimately, you know, when it comes to, I'm assuming that if you have a case from one town, it's that town shares the cost or absorbs the cost of an enforcement of that matter. I think it would be a non-starter to, for example, ask town X to fund town Z, you know, their ethical problems and enforce those issues.
But the beauty of asking for people to volunteer and accept the proposed codes of ethics that we want them to do, if we could get even just a handful of people in a COG to agree, that would put a little more pressure on other people. It may take a while for them to decide that they're going to join, but I think that would be a good beginning.
I think one big problem is the ones who have the large cities, and then they have this small little town, you know, only has about 12,000 people in it. That'll be difficult.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously the cities have more issues, more problems, more matters before them. So then, you know, the question is, who handles, do we get, I'm assuming the regional boards would be volunteer boards. You also have to devise a way of maybe multiple volunteers that are assigned to a particular matter. So for example, if a case comes from Bridgeport, no one from Bridgeport sits on it. Other town officials, municipal officials, members are selected or assigned to a given matter. So there is no conflict, or you want to remove any concerns of bias or political considerations by having outsiders sitting in judgment. And so, yeah, I mean, that's I think that's how I see this, that the whole concept of regionalization is to remove it from the town, remove it from the municipality. Mm-hmm. So no questions of bias or politics are at play.
Yeah, so I think the base, yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, Mary.
Yeah, I think that's the basic, is to have that town's people not viewing their problem. It has to be somebody else, because that's where the big problem is. And that's why nobody will serve on those boards, because they don't want to make a decision on their own people.
That's true, but how do you get people willing to volunteer if they don't know when they're going to be called upon to listen to a situation? And if you have a volunteer, are you as likely to take your role seriously as opposed to having a paid position?
Well, as far as time, I'm sure we could set parameters, as we have in our own board, that there's a certain amount of lead time between the time an accusation is made and the time the board must sit and hear it, to give them time to be able to schedule it. The other problem, you know?
Well, here's the thing. Here's, are we focusing on regionalizing strictly enforcement matters? What about compliance and provision of advice? Will that be will that remain in the hands of a local board, in other words, of a given town, if someone comes for advice on interpretation? Or are we removing that and placing it with a regional board?
Both, that's a good question.
Both compliance and enforcement.
I think that in order to make the local board feel like it has some power at all, they should be involved in advice giving and compliance.
I think I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so strictly enforcement matters would be removed. And then, you know, then it goes to, I'm assuming someone within the COG, a clerk or someone who has those type of duties, would be charged with handling an incoming matter and decide, okay, this is coming from Bridgeport or this is coming from Milford, whatever, and assign it accordingly within the board, the regional board, remove anyone who's from the town from which the matter is coming in. And so that has to be worked out as well. There has to be some kind of this kind of a traffic cop of these mm-hmm. of that type of enforcement mechanism.
I would think that probably that they would need to have an office at the COG, which is called the Office of Ethics, and then build from there what you might need. So we have somebody in that office that belongs to COG to handle the things that are coming in.
Could we offer them an avenue that when they have a case, if they have questions, that we can answer some of their questions for them at our office so that they don't feel that everything is dumped in their lap immediately. And then when they're up to speed, mm-hmm. eventually they'll be able to answer their own questions.
I mean, that could be arranged. We could have, could be their liaison to the regional board. And provide them with, you know, logistics or the handling of matters, guidance, and so on. For as they get up to speed, and that's been done in the context of other endeavors, other boards and state agencies where you have. Who comes to mind is DCD, for example, helps out other boards and other entities.
FOI, they're yes. all over the state.
Yeah, no, I mean that could be done, and I think the financial component is important because that's an automatic non-starter if they see substantial increase operating expenses to something like this. This could be, if this is a shared, this has to be done in a way that they can envision some savings or at least cost sharing.
Which brings to mind what happens if someone is found guilty of an ethics violation. The hearing is held by one of the groups in COG for, let's say, for Bridgeport, and somebody from Fairfield. We hold the hearing. We find somebody there guilty. They're fined. Where's the money go? Is that going to go to relieve the expenses of the town of Fairfield for having held the hearing? Or is it going to go to the town of Bridgeport because it's one of their people who was fined?
Good.
Well, I would say that those costs should not be, again, I think if Fairfield is sitting in judgment, is sitting making the decision, then Fairfield should be compensated for that service. And any other, there's any, there are penalties imposed and or there's a recovery of some funds, the remainder should go to Bridgeport. But I think this will be problematic from the get-go if towns are asked to provide this service, suddenly have to incur additional costs for providing that service. There has to be some kind of a compensation or reimbursement. And again, you may have towns that are very active because stuff is going on. I mean, nothing against Bridgeport, but Bridgeport is active in that area. And why should other towns bear the brunt or the cost of Bridgeport's transgressions? Maybe they need a stronger education side of things. Maybe they really have, yeah.
That would be actually, we'll have to find out how we can use that as a selling point, because you take municipalities that do have frequent transgressions. If they have a stronger ethics code and a stronger ethics board, eventually that should minimize the transgressions, because people are going to know that there is a watchdog agency looking over their shoulders and that it's going to cost them money when they're caught.
Exactly. Yeah.
No matter how we look at this, this is going to be a very hard sell. I'm not doing the half empty cup, but for every positive, you can play devil's advocate and show a negative to it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I guess my question is, we bring up Bridgeport and I'm sure Hartford, there are certain communities that would probably have more use of this. But if the majority of the towns do not have situations that would require intervention more frequently, it's kind of like saying, if it ain't broke, why fix it? We've been doing X, Y, and Z for X amount of years. Why should we all of a sudden reevaluate what we have because we're going to start this regionalization? I'm trying to play both sides to see if we have a strong enough case to move forward with this.
Another way to maybe strengthen our position and see how this goes is to start a pilot, regional pilot. In other words, have some kind of a discussion with the COG, maybe two, and suggest to them that, let's try a pilot project where, within the COG, let's assume there are 10 or 15 towns within each, you have a bunch of volunteer towns who want to participate in this kind of a regional approach and see how it goes. Let's say for a period of,
6 months.
I'm thinking more a year or two, let's say 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Because 6 months, by the time things get going and so on, I would say kind of a year or biennial type of pilot, and see where things go. And this way, I think the towns will see, okay, there's a way out. This is not, it will not be viewed as a mandate, for one, because they're always afraid of mandates. This is also, I'm sorry?
Especially unfunded mandates.
Yeah,
unfunded. Unfunded, right.
And another thing is, it's a good way to test the waters and also allow them to control the costs. They see, okay, this is something for a year or two. and see how it goes. I'm just throwing it out there as an option to make it more palatable to folks from the COG.
And that has been done at the COGS, pilot programs that finally get adopted, and mostly in transportation now. So it's not something they're not new to them.
Yeah. Because if we propose this as, okay, require all towns, all regions, or all COGS to adopt, it's going to be like Hindenburg. It's going to go down.
It's worse than a mandate.
It, going under what, under the assumption, and it's a good idea, but Peter, where would you start? Where do you think this test program or this test pilot would have the greatest chance of being most successful?
You mean where in...
Which are the COGS or...
Yeah.
I would say... We would have to review the COGS, and I've actually, last time I sent you a list of all the COGS and what towns belong to what COG and which towns have ethics boards, I'm sorry, boards codes. I think it'll be good to review the COGS that have active or at least functioning boards and functioning codes. And, well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can approach the ones that don't even, I mean, Northwest, for example, has a number of towns. I'm talking about that, the Litchfield Hills, that area. They have a number of towns that do not have codes of ethics or ethics boards.
I was thinking about.
I'm sorry?
Active. Well, I don't know what COG they're in. But Norwich is a very active. Ethics code violators, I think. I can't find the paperwork now.
And yeah, I mean, it's just a suggestion to bring this as a pilot. I would say what we would have to do is craft program, suggested program on how we envision this, how this would be funded, how it would be structured, and it would be strictly focused on enforcement. Towns would still maintain their ability to provide advice, and then present it to them. Would they be interested in adopting? Because ultimately, we really have to spark their interest in adopting this. I mean, we can approach, we can do our research and see, okay, COG, I don't know, I mean, just to pick one, for example, as Mary pointed out, I don't know the name, the Southeastern COG, Norwich or New London, that whole area. I mean, we can, you know, they could be active locally, but they may not have any interest in regionalization. So,
but the other towns there might, you know, look at it and say that might be a good idea. I mean, you know, Norwich is one of I don't know how many towns.
And then, you know, the question is, okay. So one COG volunteer decides to participate in it. And then I think it has to be determined, okay, they have, let's say 10 or 15 towns, who among them will participate in this? I don't know they would be willing to impose on their membership that type of, if this is a pilot, I think they essentially have to determine, okay, talk to your members and is anyone interested in this type of an approach for a year or two? And see how it goes. And we would, you know, I think for a year or two, we as the Office of State Ethics could certainly work with them and provide them with, you know, kind of logistical or support or also advice in terms of process and procedures.
The pilot program sounds like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them, they don't feel that they're having something thrust on them. It's something that they're going to be able to study for, let's say, 18 months, and then make up their mind if they want to make it permanent.
Exactly.
It would give them some time, so they have buy-in to it. And if they find things they want to change, there might be things we could let them modify.
But it would have to be modified in a uniform fashion.
Yeah.
I don't know, Peter, if you had any additional contact with Betsy and Randy after they met with us to get some kind of a feel as to whether or not we could pursue this in a positive way and actually make it fly.
No, I did not. I, after reviewing our discussion from the last time when we met with them at the last meeting, I thought that, you know, the expectation is that we'll at least conceptually present something to them, and after this discussion, for example, and maybe we can circulate some kind of a draft form following this meeting. We would, you know, prepare something and then go back to them and get their feedback. As they noted at the last meeting, what they want to do is, before they engage their membership, particularly within COGS, is they want to, they would like to see something. So, I mean, see something in a sense, not necessarily a final draft or some kind of a code, it's just simply a concept. So, and then they will facilitate subsequent discussions, have representatives of certain COGS attend a meeting of this subcommittee and have those conversations, kind of bounce ideas, you know, what do they think about this type of an approach?
I thought Randy said he was going to ask some people, and then he was going to get back to you on that, but he hasn't.
No, I think my understanding, and I'll go back, we have the tape of the whole proceeding, so I didn't contact him, but following our last meeting, but my thought was that we would have a conversation as we are having right now to kind of formulate, okay, some thoughts and ideas on how, what would be our proposal and how we want to handle this, and then go back to them, and then they would engage their members or the towns or COGS and facilitate further conversation too.
So do we come up with preliminary ideas and meet with Randy, let him tweak it, go back and make it a little bit more polished and then present it to him? Is that the scenario?
That's one way, or yes, we could have present a concept to him and Betsy, and then they could share the concept with their members and have their members, representatives of either towns or COGS, come into our meeting, to a subcommittee meeting, so we could have a conversation about the proposal we are presenting. Because we ultimately want to have their feedback, get an idea from them, what they think of it. I mean, ultimately, I know before anything is inked, you know, signed and so on, I understand that these folks will have to go back to their members and have those internal conversations within COGS to determine whether they have interest. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'll double check. I mean, my understanding from the last meeting was that we would, as we are doing right now, engage in this conversation, formulate something, again, just a concept, and then get back to them. Them meaning Betsy and Randy, and then they would facilitate further discussions with COGS and their members, who are also happen to be, well, one and the same CASP members and CCM members also belong to COGS, so.
Okay, want to put a time frame on when we should be coming up with this?
So I would say, you know, I can start crafting some kind of a type of a pilot narrative concept and circulate among ourselves here internally first, and you know, obtain feedback from you regarding the concept. So we're already closer to the end of, well, we're kind of the second half of June, maybe by the end of July, if that's reasonable. Have, let's say, set up a meeting. We can do it by email. We can circulate, I can circulate a draft of the concept. And then if necessary, we can meet just like we're meeting right now. Schedule a meeting maybe in early August if schedule permits, because I know.
What about after the August meeting?
Or exactly, in conjunction or following our August meeting, the board meeting.
Yeah.
That would probably be better for all, because if we're planning any other, you know, events, so that would be workable.
Okay.
That sounds good to me.
As I
craft something, you know, as soon as it's crafted, again, I think end of, yeah, I have some language here and there, so end of July is reasonable, because we're already, today is the 21st, summer solstice. Happy summer solstice to all.
Our August meeting's on the 15th, right?
I'm out of town for the ethics meeting in August.
You're out of town?
I'm just looking. We're supposed to be in Colorado with our kids. We leave Tuesday and come back Sunday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Come back the following Tuesday. It's Tuesday to Tuesday. We leave on the 16th and come back on the 23rd.
And this, so it's actually August 18th is the meeting. July 21st is our next one. And then right. August 18th, and then September 15th.
September 15th, okay.
August 18th and September 15th.
Right.
We can arrange maybe a meeting just like we're doing right now on another day if it's workable to all. I mean, we can, doesn't have to.
I'm sorry to you know, mess things up for people, but it's been booked quite a while ago.
Or sooner. I mean,
vacation
again,
time.
I'm sorry?
It's vacation time. These things happen.
Yeah. That's why, we don't hold UAPA matters in August.
Okay. Well, why don't we aim first for that July date and see where that takes us?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Is there something you would want us to give to you, Peter, before you start formulating your preliminary proposal?
You know, I mean, you can always shoot me an email if you think you would like to see something in the proposal. And once I craft the proposal, I will obviously absolutely welcome feedback from you. And if you have any ideas, alternatives, absolutely, you know, that's always, it's always welcomed as well. So how about if I maybe craft something first and then send it to you? You can review it, provide feedback. And in the meantime, if you think of something you know where to find me, by email or by phone. Let me know, you know, you thought of something following this meeting that we should certainly consider. That's always a good idea. But definitely receiving your feedback would be helpful following your review of the concept.
So if I understand this correctly, what we are focusing on is enforcement, not on advice.
Correct.
Okay.
Enforcement, and this would be crafted in a way that that this would be a pilot project. This would be an presented as a pilot project. It would be within a cog or specific cogs that wish to do that, and then you know, the whole mechanism on how an enforcement case would be handled, who would participate or sit on the matter, how it would be decided.
And funded.
And funded, yes.
Funded, yes. Okay. And also, how many people realistically, if you could, how many people would it make sense to have on this committee to review a situation that presents itself? Do you have one person, like with the UAPA hearings, that you make a decision on something, or do you have two people? What makes sense to give the person that's, I'll say, being scrutinized, not make them feel as though there is a bias against them for whatever the reason? Would it make sense to have more than one person sitting in as, I won't say judge and jury, but to hear the case?
Well, I'd almost say three would be best, so that way you have an odd person that they will feel that there's not a two people, you don't have a chance. Three people, there's always that possibility.
And here is the situation, because ultimately, whether it's a UAPA format where you have a hearing officer, or as Mary noted, three-member board, or three-member whatever panel that hears the case, clearly you have the respondent. But who's presenting the violations or alleged violations to that panel? And that, I would say, would have to be either that someone from the town, someone has to present this. Yeah. So the question is it the local board that gets the complaint and they present the complaint to the regional panel, and it's the panel that decides? So all of this has to be considered in terms of, okay, do we, so for example, let's say you have a small town, they receive the complaint, the existing local board receives the complaint, they review it and they say, okay, we have to send this off to a regional panel. Do we just simply forward the complaint to the panel and then the panel handles it, does preliminary investigation, or is the regional panel strictly acts as a judge? I mean, who actually does the investigation and prosecution of the matter?
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, most local towns, you have that have functioning ethics boards, they get a complaint and they they evaluate the complaint, they do preliminary investigation, they determine, you know, they subpoena documents, and then they prosecute. And then they make the findings whether a violation occurred. I think what would probably occur in this regional approach or in the pilot approach is that the regional panel would handle essentially the entire enforcement of the matter would be handled by a regional board, because you don't want a local board that may be accused of coloring everything in a certain way through their investigation, through their consideration of evidence, forwarding to a panel, unless they, again, that's just one way of thinking about it. Will the local board be the prosecutor, presents the case before the regional board, or do they just simply transfer the entire matter to the regional board, and the regional board independently handles the investigation, any subpoenas, any review, and then they prosecute the complaint or, you know, make the finding. So there are a few things, even within enforcement, to consider.
Right. I should think that I would want the whole thing to go to somebody removed from the situation so that there is no implicit bias, because there's always going to be some implicit bias. You know, it's one of the guys from my party that's being charged, so we're going to minimize the facts as we find them and pass them on to somebody else who won't then be able to actually know what the real facts are.
Okay, so what happens if that's the case? And I would agree with that, but then the outside party is requesting additional information and the local party is not complying and not willing to work with the regional party. What do you do?
Well, I mean, that's the question. I mean, does the regional board, do they have the power to subpoena documents? And then, you know, how do you compel, this is a pilot. That's another consideration. I mean, what kind of teeth will the regional board have to gather evidence and make determinations? Because if you have a respondent that says, I'm not going to respond to anything, I'm not going to even acknowledge the complaint. I mean, so that's the question. What type of teeth will that regional board have? Can they compel production of documents? Can they compel testimony? So all of these things would have to be addressed.
Well, they probably wouldn't they have recourse if the panel comes out with a decision and the guilty party wants something else. So they'd have to have an ability to go somewhere else if they didn't like this result.
An appellate division.
Yeah, something.
Well, that's the question. Who do we put into the appellate division? Do we put the Office of State Ethics, the Citizens Ethics Advisory Board at that point, as the appeals appellate body? Or does that matter go directly to the Superior Court for appeal purposes?
See, it just gets more and more involved. Yep.
I would like to think that it should go to us first before it went into the judicial system, because the judicial system is really looking at a completely different type of law, and most of them are not going to be as familiar with ethics laws as we are.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, well,
But those questions will certainly be asked. I mean, this will, it's good there are many eyes on this. And I wouldn't be surprised if similar questions and maybe others we didn't think of will be presented or thrown at us by representatives from COGS or from, by Betsy and Randy. So,
you know, one of the things we should be looking at.
Mark to sit in at a meeting.
Ask Mark Wazlewski to sit on the meeting. Sure, absolutely.
I mean, just so we get that legal input, more legal ease as to what we should be considering or what is really going to be a major stumbling block going forward.
Certainly. I, you know, from his experience, he's handling matters every day. So particularly when it comes to investigation, when it comes to subpoenas, I mean, he's actually dealing with one that's he's or compelling testimony back and forth with a respondent who's not too willing. So, yeah.
Peter, shouldn't we also use our membership in COBOL to reach out to other states and see if they have this problem? Do they have widespread acceptance? Is it done regionally? Is it done individually? Is it done by the state?
That's a good idea. Yeah,
that's a very good idea. That's, you know, that's our resource. Certainly, we can ask that question.
Ladies, if you all go to Montreal in December, you can ask the questions yourselves.
Exactly. I think definitely COBOL would be a good mechanism, a good place to ask those questions. I wouldn't be surprised if some states pursued pilot projects. And I'm not sure about the kind of a in similar fashion involving COGS or regional approaches, but definitely the whole concept of a pilot program has been used in the past by others.
Peter, if you could get an updated or current list of members of COBOL who are responsible for ethics and send it to me, might be a couple of names I recognize from going to the meetings in the past that I would be comfortable to call if you'd like me to.
Sure.
I know there's a woman in Denver and there's a woman in Kentucky and a couple of others, Hawaii, that I've gotten along very well with. Maybe I could talk to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the folks who annually do the ethics update document, I believe, yep. Can remember their names. So I know one is from Chicago and another one from Ohio, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a very good idea, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only June. It's amazing.
What can you come up with by August, huh?
Right.
Well, that's why brainstorming is so good.
It is, absolutely.
So.
All right, so I will, I made a note to look into COBOL and get names of the members if possible. And then I'll work on the concept. Obviously there will be some questions that, a list of questions that will likely have to be answered and we'll have to work on as this is kind of a
work in progress.
In progress. So, yep.
Okay. So by the end of July, we might have a sketch of what we discussed.
Correct. If everyone is in agreement, if that's reasonable.
Reasonable, depending upon your time frame. You're the one who has to do the working.
Usually things, at least traditionally, and this is from past experience, things slow down during summer month. So that's why, yeah, it would be a different story if it was in January, February, but yeah.
Okay, should I call this meeting adjourned?
I move we adjourn. Cheryl, would you like to second the motion?
Of course. I second.
And we're all in favor?
That covers the whole committee, so.
Yes, but sometimes small numbers get a lot accomplished.
Absolutely.
Just for the record, I don't see any members of the public on the meeting, so there's I'm assuming we don't have to ask for public comment since it's just us. So that's just so it's reflected in a record. So we can adjourn. Yeah.
Okay.
All in favor? I'm in favor.
I'm in favor.
I actually think this was extremely productive. Peter, thank you so much for your guidance.
Yep. Sure, absolutely. Anytime.
Good to have this discussion. I mean, that's important. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, guys. Perfect. Charles, don't get in trouble. Or if you do, don't call me.
Why not? I mean, life is dull if you don't have a little bit of trouble now.
All right, everybody. Be well.
You too. Yeah. Safe travels.
Well, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.